Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you. This talk today is a loose weave in and out of Nellie and Linda's topic this week, transitions, via a personal meandering narrative which begins in the dream realm. I've been studying dreams and a member of dream work groups for almost 30 years. Dream work is a sacred practice and anchor in my life. The dreamscape, its iconography and language, a path of exploration of my interior life and that of my dream group companions. I've practiced and studied a grassroots self-facilitated model of projective dream work. The way this works is that when speaking of a shared dream, one's own projections are owned and biases are owned. Expressed opinions using the language that makes delineation of that clear. The goal is not to tell someone else what you think of their dream or what it's about, or to give advice or certainty of interpretation. Rather, there is reliance upon the dreamer's self-knowledge and wisdom in recognizing resonance and possible ahas of recognition in the process of unpacking a shared dream. The dreamer is empowered to use discernment and choose when another's projection doesn't find the mark. In the dream worker community, dreams and their symbols can mean something different to each individual. Much like reflective meditation, curiosity is key to working with dreams in this form of dream work that I participate. When death shows up in a dream, death of a dreamer, another dream character, or by implication, there is almost universal agreement that the dreamer is likely to be experiencing, anticipating, or participating in some type of transition, which may range from the mundane to significant life events. After decades of working my dreams and the dreams of others, I am in agreement with my teacher and other dream scholars that death in a dream is hardly ever about a literal imminent death. Sometimes, maybe. But the majority of death dream tableaus, in my experience, point to transition or transformation in some manner, touching the dreamer's waking experience. Over the past 15 years, past 15 days, I've had several dreams in which my ex-husband is a notable character. We've been divorced for decades, and though no longer close, we were amiable enough and shared many friendships in common. I've been in close touch with that circle since Jerry's death on Christmas Eve morning from late stage Parkinson's disease. First, the sharing of the news, and then lately answering questions about particular possessions and history, personal history, and also helping connect relatives to friends who are settling his affairs and emptying his apartment. So it's no coincidence that he's showing up in my dreams. In dream speak, there's a term, day residue, which is the influence of our waking life integrating into the language of dreams. In one dream, Jerry and I are wandering around a densely foggy cove on Southeast Farallon Island, the largest island within a remote archipelago, 30 miles from the Golden Gate Bridge. It's a national wildlife refuge, not accessible to the public. Again, no mistake that we would be there together, wandering through a rookery of elephant seals, because he was, in waking life, a naturalist and field biologist on the island for nearly 25 elephant seal breeding seasons. Those seasons spanned 4 to 6 months each year, and I was fortunate to be accepted as a volunteer for several of those seasons. The first time, my stint was 54 awe-filled days. If not for having to return to the work world on the mainland, I would never have left at all. Or at least that's how it was for me at that time in my life, I thought. Weaving into the weft and topic of transitions, here's what it's like to land on the island. There are two ways to get there, by sea or air. Helicopters are a rarity and mostly only permitted for very important people, visitors, emergencies, or when supplies are needed during periods when seas are too rough for a supply boat. A network of volunteer skippers who mostly own their boats, ranging from fancy fishing vessels to many styles of sailboats, from yacht-like to simpler and sturdy seagoing vessels, volunteer their time to deliver supplies and ferry island staff. The transition from land to vessel to island is a remarkable experience as one sheds the workday life, workaday mainland life, to dwell on this island of utter wild beauty. A first visit to the island brings an unexpected, odoriferous, invisible wall that overwhelms the olfactory senses. Eyes tear up from the sheer chemical acidity of the fumes. It is the scent of decay. The first time I experienced this, my mind was racing, trying to identify what this was. There was no familiar reference point, how to describe it, how to react. There's a unique sense of humor in the rarefied island science community. An island newbie is not warned about the wall of smell. It's a small amusement to observe people's different reactions, some loud, vociferous, horrified, unable to contain themselves, others quiet and of the trained to be polite in company school. I was the latter, quietly curious, too shy among new people to make a fuss, plus delirious after hours on a sailboat in rough seas. Over time, there is a transition, and this unique aspect of the island is less pronounced. The second thing that became apparent to me upon landing was that the island was covered with small bones, feathers, and dead birds. Over the days I wandered and explored this repository of bones, I observed a littering of delicate white bird bones, skeletons, and skulls, huge, deflated, leathery seal bodies here and there, ribs and leavings for the gulls and other omnivorous creatures, gigantic elephant seal carcasses, rich nutrients in a complex system of life, feeding seabirds, bugs, and the various other life forms that contribute to decomposition. Also, the occasional remnants of great white shark feedings would wash ashore. This was a place of constant change, a profound view into impermanence. After a few days of acclimation, the aha came, recognizing the connection of the island humus and the wall of smell. Walking on an ancient funeral pyre of decay in the natural world where there was no interference. It was a landscape of constant change, transition, and connectedness with the cycles of birth, life, and death. As someone with a keen lifelong interest and fascination with death, it was a life-altering experience, a transition into a deepening of a new and different connection to nature. The small, crumbling granite, steep-walled island, a cairn of relics, was one of the greatest teachers in my life. In my recent dreams, my ex-husband and I are trying to come up with a new name scheme for the new season of elephant seal cows and pups at the West End Rocky Beach Rookery. I wanted to return to the kitchenware and utensils category, simply adding a numeral 2 at the end, fork 2, fry pan 2, toaster 2, etc. What better name for a new young bull than refrigerator 2? He wasn't convinced and leaned toward names of characters in one of his favorite movies, Dr. Strangelove. These dreams of late are for me a liminal place where Jerry and I meet, a Bardo-like world marking his transition, and an experience that keeps me grounded in the Dharma of the Five Remembrances, which I'll read for you. I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. I am of the nature to get sick. I cannot escape sickness. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. I inherit the results of my actions of body, speech, and mind. My actions are my continuation. That's the end of the talk. And I forgot to bring my bell near, so I'll just ask.